Welcome to 2010 Healthcare Reconciliation Bill Tax Provisions, How to Work with the New 3.8% Surtax. I'm Bob Keebler, and I will be your host. Joining me today is Bruce Tannehill. Many of you know Bruce, but for those that don't, Bruce is a vice president with Western Reserve Life, and he is also a lawyer. He holds a CPA credential and is a member of the AICPA's PFS group. He's a CLU, CHFC, and an accredited estate planner. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, Bob.
The reason I reached out to Bruce is because he has a very deep knowledge in the area of life insurance and annuities. With the new 3.8% Medicare tax being imposed on the lesser of net investment income or the amount of net investment income over modified adjusted gross income, annuities and life insurance planning will have a bit of a renaissance. Remember, net investment income, which is what's subject to the surtax, is a sum of gross income over allocable investment expenses. This includes interest, dividends, capital gains, annuities, rents, royalties, oil and gas income, passive activity income from real estate. What does an investment income include? In Bruce's world, investment income does not include money that's deferred in an annuity. Income that's deferred inside a life insurance policy. And if you follow the right rules and you have the right type of life insurance policy, distributions from a life insurance policy that represent basis, not taxable income. So, Bruce, why don't you just give me a little bit of an overview of how you see this tax working and why it may cause planners to reflect upon the efficacy of life insurance as an asset class, and reflect upon how annuities can have a particular impact, especially for somebody pre-retirement who expects their income to fall precipitously once they retire. So, Bruce, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what you're seeing in the first month of this bill being passed?
Yes, I can, Bob. First, I want to say that these are my opinions and may not reflect the opinions of my company. What I'm seeing is that tax deferral is becoming more important. As I understand the law, there are two components that impact the surtax. First, there's investment income. Then there's MAGI, or modified adjusted gross income. And you want to minimize both the investment income and MAGI. If you have money that comes out of an annuity and you haven't annuitized it, all of your gain is going to come out first, and only after you've taken all of the gain will you be taking out your investment or basis in the contract. That means that if you have put $100,000 into a deferred annuity, and today it's worth $200,000, the first $100,000 of that annuity balance that you take out is all going to be considered investment income, subject not only to ordinary income tax, but also to the Medicare surtax of 3.8%. Whereas if you look at life insurance, most life insurance policies with cash value, you can take money out with your basis coming out first through withdrawals, and then even after you've taken out of your basis, you can take out loans. Those will not be considered investment income. One thing about life insurance policies is if a policy is considered a modified endowment contract or a MEC, then you have the annuity taxation rules for distributions during life. And a MEC is simply a life insurance policy that is front-loaded, and you put a lot of money in up front with the hope that you don't have to pay money in future years. The advantage of using a deferred annuity or life insurance policy is that any money that grows in the annuity or life insurance policy is not going to be considered investment income, and so will not be subject to the Medicare surtax.
So, Bruce, let's break this down. Let's just start. Help me out here. Make sure I understand this. If I have an annuity, and I pull out money from that annuity, wealth from that annuity, that is going to be investment income for purposes of the surtax. Does that sound right?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
that's absolutely right.
So, but let's look at the annuity. I see annuities in a number of contexts, but one of the easier contexts to see an annuity in might be this. Let's assume I'm making $250,000 a year from my job. That's my only income, except I have $500,000 in CDs. And the $500,000 in CDs, let's just pretend it was generating $25,000 of annual interest income. All of that interest income would not only be subject to ordinary tax, but it would get caught in the surtax. Now, if I put that into an annuity, I'm going to have deferral, maybe from the time I'm 50 to the time I retire at 65. I would avoid the surtax on that. But then when I open up that annuity at 65, if I understand you correctly, because my income is now down below the threshold amounts, remember the threshold amounts are $250,000 for a married couple, $200,000 for a single person, and about $11,000 or $12,000 for a trust. So if I'm below the threshold amount, I could then take the money out and I'd completely avoid the surtax. So that might be one interesting place an annuity becomes helpful. Does that, as a strategy, does that seem like a place to begin the discussion?
Yes, it does. Because, as you said, by putting the money into the annuity, you are deferring both regular tax and the Medicare surtax on that $25,000 a year that's coming out of the CDs.
See, so this is really powerful then.
It is a significant benefit to people who are generating investment income that they're not using for current living expenses.
Now, bigger picture-wise, when we prepped for this, we talked about whether an annuity could be used in a trust. Like, I die, my money goes into a trust. We want to keep it in there because paying it to my wife will only cause more estate tax in her estate. If we keep it in the trust, we can avoid future estate tax. But how do we avoid the surtax? Help me out under what circumstances, Bruce, a trust can actually own an annuity.
There are significant restrictions on a trust's ability to own an annuity and qualify for tax deferral. The tax law says that the trust has to be considered an agent for a natural person to get tax deferral. The tax law and IRS have not really defined what being an agent for a natural person means. In some private law rulings, which of course aren't precedential authority, the IRS has indicated that a grantor trust would be considered an agent for a natural person, which is consistent with both the grantor trust law and published IRS rulings. But they've also indicated that if the only beneficiaries of the trust are individuals, then the trust would be considered an agent for a natural person and qualify for tax deferral of any annuities that it owns. And as you know, because the threshold for trust being subject to the Medicare surtax is about $11,000 or $12,000, that is a huge ability or difference if the annuity qualifies for tax deferral or if it doesn't.
And that is a very critical thing for everyone to understand. Trusts especially will need to step back here and evaluate how they structure their investments, because this tax is going to drive the rate on a trust that has over $11,000 of income from today's rate of 35% to a new rate of 43.4%, because we're probably going to go back to a 39.6% rate. Now, with that said, let's switch gears for a moment and talk about, Bruce, what is the difference in the taxation of an annuity? So I've held my money in the annuity from age 50 to 65, and then I say, hey, I got to start getting money out to live on. You know, my wages are gone. I'm going to take money out. Now, if I annuitize it, I understand I get one tax treatment, and if I just pull dollars out, I get a different tax treatment. Can you very succinctly walk us through that?
Yes. If you pull money out of an annuity without annuitizing it, without telling the insurance company that issued the annuity to send me a regular check every month for whatever time period I choose, and at the end of that time period, that's it. You get one tax treatment, just using what we call exclusion ratio, and that ratio looks at how much you put into the annuity and how much you're expected to get out, and every payment that you receive from that annuity will consist of return of basis and some income till you've received all of your basis back, and then it's all income. But that gives you the ability to shelter a lot of each payment from income tax because it's return of basis. If you don't annuitize and you just tell the insurance company, send me a check every month, but I reserve the right to change it or stop it, then it's going to be just your gain or income first, and only after you've taken out all of the income will you be recovering your basis. That means that your beginning payments are all going to be subject to income tax and thus subject to the Medicare surtax.
Now, can you amortize over a period of years or annuitize over a period of years, or do you have to annuitize over life expectancy?
It depends on the annuity, but generally you have the choice of annuitizing over a certain number of years, such as 5, 10, 20 years, or your life, or however long you live. Or third option often is for a specific number of years or your life, whichever is greater.
I think I understand. Now, what if I was came to you and I was going to invest $100,000 in an annuity for 3 years in a row? The way I understand this is sometimes it makes sense to ladder or structure separate annuities as long as the cost, the commissions going in are the same and you're not paying anything extra, because then you're going to be able to get a little bit better tax treatment when the money comes out. In other words, if I had an annuity that I created in year 1, year 5, and year 10, and then I retired, I would first amortize the annuity from year 10 because that's going to have less built-in gain, and then I'd annuitize the one from year 5, leaving the one with the highest built-in gain to the very end, getting the additional deferral. Can you just put some meat on that thought, Bruce?
Certainly. The idea is that by laddering the annuities, you're letting the oldest annuity, the one you put money in first, continue to grow on a tax-deferred basis for the longest period of time, whereas the newer annuities, the ones you're going to access first, are going to have less gain in them, assuming comparable investment performance. So when you start taking money out of the third annuity, you're going to have a small amount of gain. So if you don't annuitize, you're going to take your gain out first, and then you're going to hit your basis quickly. And if you annuitize, you're going to have a larger amount of basis compared to your gain, so a larger percentage of that payment you receive each month or each quarter is going to be basis, and a smaller amount is going to be income.
Which gives you a much better result.
That's right. You are accomplishing both of your objectives. You're reducing your magi, and you're reducing your investment income.
Now, Bruce, let me switch gears on you. Let's go through and talk about life insurance. Let's start with a real life example. I have a policy that I started when I was 24 years old, which is almost 25 years ago now. And the way I understand the law, if I was going to take money out of that policy, the first question I would ask is whether that was a MEC, a modified endowment contract, or whether that was a non-MEC contract. Can you explain the difference between the two, and then brief us on the tax implications, assuming my policy is not a MEC, of what happens when I just withdraw principal.
Certainly. MEC is a policy that you have put a lot of money in up front on the expectation that after you pay for a few years on a policy, it's going to have enough premiums and earnings to sustain it for the rest of your life. And if you put too much money in up front, the IRS says, you're looking at this not as life insurance, not for the death benefit, but as an investment. So we're going to tax it like an annuity during your life. That means money comes out of a MEC policy, income first, and only if you've taken all of the money that's income out will it be return basis. And that applies whether you take loans from the policy or withdrawals. Plus, if you're under 59 and a half and you take a loan or a distribution from a MEC, you're going to be subject to the same 10% penalty that would apply if you take an early distribution from an IRA or non-qualified annuity. If the policy is a non-MEC policy, then the normal treatment of distributions from the life insurance policy will apply. You can take loans or withdrawals from the policy without being subject to income tax or the 10% penalty that would apply to a MEC policy. And if policy is 25 years old, such as your policy, you don't have to worry about a MEC because those rules started in 1988. But any policy purchased after the middle of 1988 is subject to the MEC rules. That means you have much more flexibility for taking money out of a non-MEC policy than a MEC policy.
So, Bruce, I guess in my mind, life insurance can be used two or three ways here. One way would be to buy insurance in a bypass trust as a way of keeping the money in the trust so it doesn't have to be paid out to my wife or it increases her estate tax, but yet avoid the surtax. Another way would be during my lifetime, I could pull out basis first and not have to, not incur the surtax. And I guess a third way is when I run out of basis, I could borrow. And perhaps a fourth way is I can borrow just on a very tactical basis. And if I'm getting close to the surtax, but I need more, more cash flow, I could borrow and then repay that. And just try to keep my income nice and smooth below the 250. Those are three thoughts, but could you comment on those, please?
Yes. So if you're taking money out of a life insurance policy, many times it works out best to take the basis out first and then to take loans from the policy. And if you have money that you don't need, you can repay some of the loans, and then gives you more money that you can take out later if you need additional cash flow. And by taking money out of a non-MEC life insurance policy, you are keeping your MAGI and your investment income down and reducing or eliminating the Medicare surtax.
So there's some real opportunities here. If you can, if clients come to see us, there's tactical opportunities and strategic opportunities. I guess strategically, instead of putting money into CDs or maybe even into annuities, I might look at life insurance. And tactically, for the insurance policies we already have, we could either take basis out or borrow against them if we're trying to smooth out income. So it seems to me that both annuities and insurance, again, will have a bit of a renaissance when we work through all this. And, you know, I think because of the estate tax situation, because we really haven't had an estate, or we've known we were going to have a estate tax repeal, my thought is that much of our skill set has become rusty on insurance and annuities, perhaps too, in the last 5 to 10 years. And so there's a lot of work that we have to do to get back up to speed. Bruce, in big picture wise, if I'm a financial planner or CPA or lawyer in the middle of America someplace, Are there any materials out there you would recommend for people to look at, things you use every day that might help people get up to speed on this?
There are some good materials on life insurance that are put out by some of the major publishers. National Underwriter has some good materials on using life insurance. I believe Lineberg Services has information on how to use life insurance. And of course, any life insurance agent that the client or the advisor is working with can provide them with information from carriers they work with that explain the tax benefits of life insurance both during life as well as upon death. One thing that clients and advisors need to watch out for when using life insurance and taking loans is they want to make sure the policy stays in force until the client insured dies, because if you take in loans from the policy that exceed the basis, the policy lapses, there will be an income taxable event at that time.
You know, I guess we probably should have said up front, but it's important for everybody to realize, is that part of the life insurance discussion is if all I do is invest in life insurance, you know, $2,000 a year for my entire life, when I die, all of the growth on that is forgiven from an income tax perspective because there's a specific statute that excludes life insurance from taxable income.
That's right. The Internal Revenue Code specifically says that life insurance death benefits are income tax free unless you make a mistake.
Bruce, this has been a very good talk today, and I want to thank you for your time and your insight. You are truly a wealth of knowledge on these issues, and I would encourage everyone to think about how to plan for the surtax. How do we reduce investment income? How do we reduce modified adjusted gross income? And what can we do? Now, remember, this doesn't start to 2013, but planning for this is going to have to start sooner than that, especially when we're looking at clients that die, bypass trusts are created. How do we fund those bypass trusts? Do we buy municipal bonds or do we buy taxable bonds? Those will all become part of this equation. So again, Bruce, I just want to thank you and hope you'll come back for a new program in the future.
Thank you very much, Bob. I've enjoyed it, and I hope our listeners have learned something that they can use to help their clients.